Olympic athletes, Simone Biles, Michael Phelps, or famous people, you know, Demi Lovato, Justin Bieber. There's always a failure signal that comes from, I'm not good enough. So what Fresh Try does is it really prevents and also mitigates failure and even reframes failure if somebody thinks that they did it, and more focuses on what's the iteration that can happen so that somebody can stay in effort long term.
Welcome to Digital Health Disruptors by Charm Health, empowering innovative clinicians on the digital health frontier. On this podcast, we explore the trials and triumphs of pioneers at the intersection of technology and healthcare. I'm your host, Ranjini Rangan. Hello, startup enthusiasts and clinician entrepreneurs. I'm buzzing with excitement to dive into today's episode. Get ready for a riveting exploration into the mind, discovering how to conquer failure and stay motivated in the world of behavior change. My guest today is Dr. Kyra Bobinant. With not only expertise in healthcare innovation, neuroscience, health disparities, and population health management, she's also an accomplished public health physician for over three decades, a Harvard graduate, and a best-selling author. Really honored to have her on our podcast. Her best-selling book, Well-Designed Life, stands as an indispensable tool for health innovators worldwide. The anticipation is also building for her upcoming release of her next book, The Unstoppable Mind, promising to elevate her contributions to new heights. So here are the four big takeaways with this podcast. First up, let's dive into the fascinating world of a tiny brain region, the habenula. This influential behavior controller plays a crucial role in shaping our experiences. For health tech enthusiasts, understanding its function is key when crafting applications for behavioral change. Moving on, we'll explore Dr. Bobinant's unconventional startup journey. She's teamed up with Walmart, a major Fortune 10 company, to secure funding, scale up, and carve her own path. And then, raised in a family with deep-rooted trauma, we'll unravel the roots of Dr. Kyra Bobinant's success. And lastly, let's deep dive into Dr. Bobinant's AI digital health app, reshaping the behavior change landscape, Fresh Try. She tackles weight loss amid the myriad challenges of medicine. If you've ever pondered why we engage in certain behaviors, or more importantly, how can we transform those we wish to change, this episode is about to blow your mind. Let's dive in. Welcome to Digital Health Disruptors, Dr. Kyra Bobinant. I'm thrilled to have you here on our podcast.
It's wonderful to be here.
Let's dive into Fresh Try, this mindset habit-building app that you founded back in 2013. It's making waves, ranking in the top 200 downloads on Google Play in the US and in the top 100 in Canada under the health and fitness category. You've also had over 800,000 downloads. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of how Fresh Try works, could you give our listeners a bit of an introduction?
Yeah, so Fresh Try is the first of its kind software for behavior change that's designed for how our brains work. And what's unique about it is that we take into account an area of the brain called the habenula, which nobody knows about, but I'm here to spread the word on, which is like the most significant behavior controller ever found. And so the habenula is responsible for detecting any failure that we might have. And then if the habenula lights up, then the second thing it does is it kills our motivation to keep trying. So what Fresh Try does is it really prevents and also mitigates failure and even reframes failure if somebody thinks that they did it, and more focuses on what's the iteration that can happen so that somebody can stay in effort long term.
Back in the mid-19th century, a German anatomist spotted the habenula, but it was sidelined in mainstream neuroscience due to its size and complexity. Now, with advancements in techniques like functional imaging, researchers began unraveling its involvement in decision-making and motivation. Armed with this knowledge, healthcare professionals are starting to see the habenula's potential in improving our understanding and treatment of psychiatric and neurological conditions.
This turns out to be the essential ingredient for habit formation and neuroplasticity in order to actually see change that is lasting, that is sturdy enough to be your new default of how you do things. And so that's really what we're focused on, is long-term change.
This habenula, it's a pea-sized area of the brain. It regulates a whole host of neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, acetylcholine. Absolutely. Why is this important?
So for many, many years, myself and my colleagues and my contemporaries have fixated almost on dopamine. But all the while, the habenula is even more powerful than the dopamine system. And so it can control and suppress dopamine when you are trying to do something good for yourself if you think you failed at doing that thing. And so it's turning out to be involved in obesity. It's involved in depression, anxiety, OCD, addiction, and then also insomnia. And so it's kind of this node of so many important things that we try to do on a public health level, on a population health level, on a patient care level, to try to get people to do the thing that they know they should do or that they want to do for their health. And without knowing about the habenula, we keep running into the same old thing, like I did for years, expecting different results.
What led you to weight loss specifically?
It's a disease unto itself, but it's also a symptom of other diseases. And so 200 chronic diseases associated with obesity, and also just all of the mental health impacts of not feeling good in your body, all the GI distress, all the musculoskeletal problems. I like to do things that are really impactful. And so the biggest impact really was there.
The data shows it. Globally, about 10% of people are dealing with obesity now. In the US, 1 out of 3 adults fall into the obese category. For Dr. Bobinette, though, connecting the dots between obesity and the habenula was pivotal in tackling health issues. This was the birth of Fresh Try, an app that promotes an iterative process, encouraging you to try activities you're interested in. If they don't work out, you can iterate until you find practices that suit your life. But what about the sea of other weight loss apps already out there? In fact, Noom, based on cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, was one of the top search diet terms on Google in 2018. Can you highlight the key difference between Noom and why you think you're better?
Yeah, absolutely. If I have a performative program like goals and tracking and like measuring everything and competitions and paying people to do stuff, and I have an iterative program, they're both going to lose the same amount of weight. Like CBT is great when the program's happening, but after a while, the performance-based one will have that side effect of failure. Small steps, like making something smaller, it increases the chances of success, but then afterwards you have this giant relapse. As long as there is a specter of failure and you're not preparing or recovering from that event, then you're going to have somebody who went through your program, whose habenula turned on, they don't want to face their coach or their group or whatever anymore because they're so ashamed. And then you lose them, but not only that, but they're less likely to have motivation to try again. And you see this in the data because most of the American population right now is jaded. They say diets don't work. It's not their fault. It just has a nasty side effect. I don't see Noom. I don't see Weight Watchers. I don't see anybody really focusing deliberately on removing or mitigating or neutralizing failure events in the process of somebody trying to change their life.
You say no tracking, measuring, no guilt, shame, or failure. But how do you balance the need for some sort of long-term goals, keeping this iterative process and the shame at distance?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the word goals has become loaded with SMART goals. And so it has that liability, unfortunately, as a word. I like to use intention or aims to not summon all the baggage that the word goals has. And now it's about finding what works for you for how long. You could try something as a habit that would work for a little while or for a lifetime. What I want you to keep doing is to iterate your way through that. You're not going to blame yourself. You're going to be like, that didn't fit me for now, and be able to come back and redesign and apply those learnings and make a better choice next time.
Interesting. Your critics, what do they say?
It's mostly around like, don't take away my performance-based tools. I'm measuring everybody in my company with performance-based tools. I'm measuring my health and my weight and all these things. So I would say that people who are very performative, maybe they're athletes, maybe they're super high performers, they win, they get the straight A's, they get worried that I'm saying they can't have that anymore. I'm okay with performance-based tools. It's just that only 5% of people maximum would do that lifelong. But if they overuse performance, like in the case of Olympic athletes, Simone Biles, Michael Phelps, you know, Demi Lovato, Justin Bieber, there is always a point where the disappointment, the I'm not good enough, the didn't do that concert awesome or that one routine awesome, there's always a failure signal that comes from overperforming. It causes a lot of like psychological pain. And then they reach for addictions to quiet it up. So I don't think I have a critic at the end of the day, honestly. We end up understanding each other and me supporting how they would like to do things, but also them realizing how to be safer with what they're trying.
Here, Dr. Bobinette's own struggles mirror the realities that Americans are faced with today.
So I grew up very weight conscious. My family on both sides had diabetes and also obesity struggles and things like that. So I was raised on fast food and I was addicted to it when I got to college. And then I was exercising like crazy to kind of like make up for my terrible addiction, right? So I would look like I wanted to look in terms of my weight and size. And then as I got older, I had kids, I started to lose that battle. And I had to start dealing with my food issues. And what I would do is I would binge on a cake or a pie. And then I felt like a failure at my intentions to not binge on pie. Now, since knowing about the habenula, how I do it differently is if I watch myself relapse, I'm like, oh, first of all, don't blame myself. Do not feel like I failed. Just iterate. Maybe I was stressed and I went for the pie, whatever the case may be. And then I'm just like, I reel it back because I'm not wallowing in the failure. And my habenula is not on. The only thing that really works long-term is the thing that you can get yourself to do.
Coming up in our next segment, a deeply insightful conversation about resilience and determination. Discover how Dr. Bobinette's childhood experiences shaped her mission and vision, from her mother's struggles in boarding school to her father's legal challenges. We'll unravel Dr. Bobinette's transition from medical school to entrepreneurship, and what happens when healthcare expertise meets the retail giant Walmart. Finally, are GLP drugs for weight loss the future, or is there a more holistic approach? Attention, clinician entrepreneurs and technologists. Are you ready to revolutionize healthcare at the point of care? Discover the Charm Health platform, a perfect ecosystem where technologists and clinician entrepreneurs connect, ideate, and thrive. To find out more about what we do, visit us at charmhealthchallenge.com. Dr. Bobinette's journey to becoming a behavior disruptor for long-lasting habit change wasn't just recognizing if our habenula was tripped on. It stems from an epigenetic history of trauma that perpetuated some pretty hard truths. You've talked about your father's incarceration, your mother's trauma survival. Tell me a little bit about your childhood.
So my mom is a Ojibwe woman. She was taken from her family and put into a religion-run boarding school for Native American children. So she's 5 years old, where she was in a room of 100 kids on cots, separated from her older siblings. And then she was also punished for speaking her native language. And so it could be a smack on the hand or berated and told that she was nothing. And then she goes into the foster care system where she is then assaulted in physically, sexually, all those things. So she's got this major PTSD, and then she has me and raised me remarkably because my mom sheltered me from what she went through. My dad, he is now deceased, but he was a Bohemian Czech in Iowa. He went into pharmacy, and midway through college, he decided to embezzle over-the-counter like Maalox and, you know, aspirin and things like that from his VA pharmacy that he was running. And was being indicted on embezzlement. And then that basically carries out throughout my college years, where he's now in a halfway house and he did his time in a federal penitentiary and was not a hard man, was not a violent person, but made a very big moral error that he paid for dearly. And for me as a kid, and even as a college student, I very much felt this intense need to support myself. and raise my own money and take care of myself and be independent and stuff like that. So I think that the combination between those two parental tragedies, if you will, was me becoming more strong in myself. My ACE score, you know, adverse childhood events score, which is a maximum of 10, I believe is a 7 or 8.
The adverse child event score, or ACE score for short, it's basically like a measure of childhood abuse, neglect, or really rough events. The higher someone's ACE score, the more likely they are to deal with a whole bunch of health issues later on in life. We're talking addiction, mental health struggles, chronic disease, you name it. A past that can really catch up with us if we don't address it. But Dr. Bobinette is the poster child between childhood experiences, resilience, and social identity. Understanding that the impact of childhood experiences can inform the work we do, whether we're in healthcare or running a startup. For Dr. Bobinette, what really stands out is the importance of empathy, compassion, and resilience in how we tackle the challenges others face.
And so I do come with a broken heart in the background of my being. And that's good because it kept my heart open. You know, it made me care about people. It gave me compassion for people. And it's not something I would ever trade for $1 million. But also I had kind of an Achilles heel of, I called it confidence dumping syndrome, because coming from such humble backgrounds, walking into Harvard's, walking into these kind of like elite areas where it seemed like I was weird in that way, like I'd had a hard childhood compared to other people. So it took me many years of healing that to really find my feet and to find my confidence and to have that be stable.
What a poignant story. Almost have tears in my eyes just hearing your story. Mm-hmm. How do you think these early experiences have shaped your mission and vision in your current endeavors?
Yeah, I think that I started out wanting to study something quite cold, gene therapy, which then became immunotherapy and cancer research. And I started out medical school. I would say I wasn't caring about people, but if you looked at my volunteer work, I did care about people. And so I was in denial. I want to empower people and have people be empowered by knowing this information. And so I think the drive of that is watching my mom, who's a champion, come from less than nothing into a decent life. I don't even know if there's another Native American psychoanalyst, you know. She did the impossible, and she did it with iteration, and it was all there the whole time. Wow. I just didn't have words. I didn't really know how significant or important that was. She's amazing. And my dad, same thing. My dad was really inventive with things, you know, and I stand on their shoulders. You know,
you look at your parents with a great deal of compassion, which is, I think, the secret. You've come to peace and you've understood it at a very deep level. What inspired you to transition from medical school to entrepreneurship? And what was that experience like?
Yeah, what I would say is that I had every intention to cure cancer through being in a lab. I had a Dean's Research Prize at UCSF to do my work. In my first year in medical school, I had almost like a Jerry Maguire experience where I like had an awakening where I was like, oh, there's all these really talented people going over here, including cancer research, and nobody's coming over here to help vulnerable people or the less advantaged, not many, and not in the, like not as a clinician, but as a person, you know? And so I felt drawn to youth who were incarcerated. Like I started volunteering at the juvenile hall.
However, it was a single encounter with a patient during her clinical training that truly sparked a shift in her trajectory.
You know, 8 years out of medical school, I was going back. I had applied for residency and I was about to match. And I was in a clinic and a patient came in and he's Native American. And he basically says, well, I've got this painful toe. It's very clear, classic gouty toe. I say, well, how did this come about? And he goes, well, 3 days ago, I did meth and I haven't been asleep since. And so meth, dehydration, and then the gout. And I'm writing a prescription for the gout. And something clicked in me. And I was like, you know, I'm on the wrong end of this animal. So then I spoke with my clinical mentor, Dr. Ramsey, who said, you know, you're a great clinician. I have no doubt that you would be amazing. She said, but I always thought that you were meant for something bigger. And that was a license to leave. This is not my passion. It's not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in behavior change. And so then I went to Harvard for public health school, with pursuing the closest thing I could on behavior change related stuff.
Were there individuals or mentors who played a significant role in guiding you?
Oh yeah. I have had Rick Williams, a Lakota elder now, known him for 40 years. Curtis Wright, known him for 25 years. He's a retired history teacher for his church. He's African American and Native American, and he is a master communicator, master horseman, a natural horseman, master falconer randomly, and just is able to turn everything into a teaching. And then Sylvia Gretchen, Tibetan Nyingma Buddhist meditator and teacher of Buddhist psychology for many decades. And then Mac Roach, none of us does any of this alone. And we're realizing that it just takes a lot for all of us to rise together.
We've covered some fascinating ground so far, and the adventure continues. In the next segment, we're diving into the dream relationship with Walmart, unpacking Dr. Bobinet's thoughts on GLP-1 drugs for weight loss, and what Dr. Bobinet looks for in prospective collaborations. Are you ready to revolutionize healthcare at the point of care? Discover the Charm Health platform, perfect ecosystem where technologists and clinician entrepreneurs connect, ideate, and thrive. To find out more about what we do, visit us at charmhealthchallenge.com. Dr. Bobinet's track record in healthcare is undeniable.
So my thesis at Harvard was all about the ROI of population health tools, and I designed the algorithm for risk stratification at Aetna and patented that there with them. And so, really have been in this game a long time in terms of the healthcare economics and what moves the needle.
But what good is a deep understanding of driving change in healthcare without the reach to truly make a difference? While many startups grapple with the challenge of gathering data and face limitations, Dr. Bobinet's journey took a fortuitous turn. After delivering a keynote presentation, she caught the attention of Walmart representatives who approached her with a request.
They approached me and they said, "Hey, can you do some behavioral research for us?" And I said, "Sure." They wanted to know what works for chronic condition management, diabetes, obesity, hypertension, all these things.
Through research utilizing behavior design methods, Dr. Bobinet uncovered a remarkable discovery.
The thing they shared in common is that they were able to change their behavior, losing weight, getting off their medications, eating healthy, exercising, all those things, and keep it for 2+ years or longer. These special people who worked at Walmart, who faced all kinds of social determinants of health issues, obstacles, economic, social, time management, parental, all the sort of demands on them, they somehow made it through.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. And how does being associated with Walmart enhance your app's visibility or credibility?
Walmart was really an amazing partner in that they were allowing us to connect with various groups of associates. We were really just sampling different people from different walks of life all along the way to make sure that we were really serving everybody's needs in a center of gravity kind of way. It's really been this dream relationship of them wanting to truly serve the health and the well-being of their associates, no matter what their life station is, no matter what their background is. There was times when they're like, "Prove it," and then we would take a big chance and we would measure something and it would work out because, again, we were following the brain science that I had a lot of confidence in, but it's still kind of scary to do that on stage.
Right.
And then they would increase our contract with them and they would have multi-year contracts with us. Full credit to Walmart and the Walmart associates who really helped us co-build and co-design and co-validate what we have today. It's been just a dream project.
You were able to try out this iterative process and refine your app using the people from Walmart?
Yeah, we coded the interviews. We then formed a hypothesis around what kind of mindset is really distinctive with them. And then the Fresh Try software is all about coding that into a scalable experience so that more people can be like this special group of people that were able to kind of make it through the rat maze, if you will.
So Fresh Try has received 100% of its funding from Walmart?
We're privately funded, yes. So we have not raised. The bulk of that is a contract with Walmart to license the software. And then we also have had multi-year contracts with the CDC to do a version of the software that also helps with diabetes prevention program coaches to be able to use the app. We are publishing with them and they are presenting the data to conferences at this point. And so we will always have a free version that will help you lose weight.
With profitability taking a backseat, Dr. Bobinet's goal is to make the user's journey as smooth as possible.
What we are doing is we're integrating with their retail behemoth and being able to really match people's behavior with products that are affordable to them. And this is totally in service to the user. It's not to make money. We monetize by selling the coaching and the custom versions to other buyers. But what we want to do in service to the user is basically put in front of them products that will help ease their way, will help them accomplish the habit.
Staying in effort is the challenge. Dr. Bobinet's patented method, the iterative mindset method, encourages individuals to embrace a more forgiving and understanding outlook towards themselves.
What we do is we have how-to videos, how to integrate this into your lifestyle, how-to recipes, how-to hacks from other users or from the literature that you can trust that have been vetted. Mm-hmm. Specifically, like if you practice yoga, what this is going to be able to do is give you all the list of accoutrements for yoga. So nobody's really like nailed the healthy behavioral intention with easing that path. And it's such a crapshoot if you go on to social media and you're following some influencer. It may not be flattering on me. It may not fit, all that kind of stuff. It has to be centered around the person. And that's where the design thinking goes back to, like, you know, being user-centered as the North Star for building anything useful is super important. And this is one example where you could go really sideways and say, oh, let's just try to make a lot of money and sell a bunch of products. Like, people can feel that. They can feel the intention of your design for them and what you're really up to because they're smart and they're skeptical and they should be.
I see. So is that all driven by AI?
Yes.
Like, how do they choose the products?
There's an AI partner that we have that basically takes all of our intentions, all of our ideas, and then scans and scours recipe. This is mostly with recipes right now, to be in service to that person's health conditions, as well as their taste preferences, something we call neurotyping. And so really takes all of that into account and codes the recipes to be tagged with that information so that they're given to the right user that would be most likely to use them.
Up next, we will explore Dr. Bobinet's perspectives on GLP-1s like Ozempic and Wegovy and the invaluable advice she offers to entrepreneurs. Some of the latest breakthroughs in medications like GLP-1s that have revolutionized obesity care. Clinical trials show that for one GLP-1 in particular, participants achieved an average of 12.4 weight loss at 68 weeks of treatment versus the placebo. How do you work with all the latest in weight loss medicine, for example?
So far, it looks like the data on GLP-1s is following the same curve of medication adherence of any medication, which is about 50% at a year. In practice, either because of the side effect profile, the cost, just the inconvenience of just injecting yourself all the time, the pain of that, it will even out. There's some safety risks around muscle wasting that are still to be, you know, figured out in terms of quantity. If it works for you, do it. Ride it all the way through. Most people, 95% of people, will not be on it long term, because nothing works for everyone long term. And so for those people, what I care about is that they don't have a habenula event of like, oh, see, I'm so bad, even GLP-1s didn't work for me. And then they regain the weight and they feel bad about themselves. So I'm trying to break that part of it. Let's see how long it works for you. Maybe you'll do other kinds of things. The mindset of iteration is the most protective thing for everybody to adopt and to utilize.
On Noom's website, they had something called Noom Med. They have a partnership with some of these weight loss medications. And so I was wondering if you could foresee yourself doing something similar, having any sort of collaborations?
I think that I'm willing to collaborate with anybody who is helpful to people, especially people who are, you know, focused on long-term change. I'm more on the public health side of things, meaning like I'm more on the side of the person, the payer and the employer who pay for these things at scale, because people who can afford them out of pocket are a whole different population and they can get those from their doc in town. So I'm thinking about like what's affordable for everybody, what's accessible for everybody long term in terms of how these new medications enter the market. So I'm not quite sure where the ball is going to bounce and where it's going to land in terms of the exact correct use for them for different patients.
That's fantastic. So for aspiring clinicians in the digital health space, what advice would you give them?
I believe that if you are drawn to this, it won't be easy, but there will be these cookie crumbs, these little lights on your path that will show up. The synchronicities is kind of how I call it, you know, where you feel a stir in your being and you start walking in that direction. And then you start to see the impossible become possible, even in a small way. And yes, you have to overcome fear and you have to reach, grab to be able to pull yourself up. But I guarantee you that the way will light itself up. It's definitely a walk of full effort and research and figuring out and iteration, but also fully surrendering because you know that your heart is pulling you in that direction and there's just no other choice. Just like with the design thinking process, having first principles that you're coming from, having a hypothesis and then following the data, following the science, not deluding yourself, but also believing in what you're seeing. And one thing that I would say is just getting away from what you know.
A lot of wisdom, Dr. Babinet. In designing apps for a better life and mindset, any key takeaways that you'd like to share?
Yeah, support people in iteration. And what I would really like to see more is people developing tools that really institutes and follows more of a learning path and a progress and a process path, as opposed to these, you know, kind of blindfold dart exercises where you're like, I'm going to lose 20 pounds by this date and in this way, and I will be this appearance, you know, and that's just a losing gamble.
It's interesting, actually. It's the reason I homeschooled, especially in elementary school and middle school. I'm like, I want you to cultivate the love for learning and not really be focused on the grade. Your grades are going to be great. If you have the love of learning, you're going to get there anyway.
What a great mom you are.
Thank you so much.
Like I think that that's the next gen. You know, we've played out the performative tools to the fullest of their ability. Mm-hmm. Now it's about really contextualizing those and not having people fail and cut themselves on all these performative tools that have been built with billions of dollars of funding. It's going to take all of us to change this paradigm. So please help people to realize that they are not failing if one of these does not work for them or they don't do it perfectly, and coach people differently.
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. If you can give the names of your two books and say a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well Designed Life was my first book. And that's really about like all the significant neuroscience features that one needs to design health and healthy change in a good way. And then zooming in on the area of the brain called the habenula for Unstoppable Brain, which is my second book. And in that book, we really debunk the overuse of performative tools. And we also talk about, you know, real change in the brain being habit formation based on neuroplasticity, and then failure disease. I think we need to have a conversation around all the different flavors and types of failure, because people have their own little favorite ways to fail and blame themselves. So that's what I would say. And you're welcome to look at my website, drkarababinet.com. Reach out to me on freshtry.com, which is my company. I'm very happy to share whatever I can do to help boost other people.
Dr. Kyra Babinet, it's been truly an insightful conversation today, from exploring the roots of Fresh Try's inception and your groundbreaking work in reshaping the landscape of health tech, from your approach to behavior change rooted in neuroscience. Particularly the focus on the habenula offers a really unique perspective. And I appreciate your openness in discussing your childhood experiences and how they've shaped your journey? The partnership with Walmart adds an intriguing dimension, addressing specific problems for their customers and enhancing the app's reach and credibility. Thank you so much, Dr. Bob Minnett, for being a true digital health disruptor. It's been an honor to have you here, igniting inspiration for clinicians turned entrepreneurs. Thank you so much. As we wrap up another enlightening episode of Digital Health Disruptors, we hope you, our listeners, have gained fresh perspectives and inspiration from today's conversation. The world of digital health and innovation is a dynamic one, and we're here to guide you through it. If you enjoyed this episode and want to stay connected with the latest in healthcare technology and entrepreneurship, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Your feedback fuels our mission to deliver top-notch content. Stay tuned for more exciting interviews with visionaries, innovators, and disruptors in the digital health space. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories that redefine the future of healthcare. Until next time, keep innovating, stay fearless, and continue to be part of the disruption that's shaping the future of healthcare. We'll see you next episode.